Welcome to BitCast on Podcast One, the video game podcast with the Axeman.
Welcome back to the BitCast. I'm your host, the Axeman, also known as Alex. I'm joined once again by my guest,
Henry, the guest.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about a game that I've wanted to tackle for a little while, but I felt like it would be better with the two of us talking over it. We're going to talk about an indie juggernaut from 2015 known as Undertale.
I'm sure everybody in the audience has probably heard of this game at the very least, if not played it.
Yeah, if you're all gamers. I don't know who all is listening to this, but chances are, if you like video games, you've heard of Undertale since it came out, and you probably have some grasp of what the game is about, or at least what kind of things are in the games. You might have seen artwork of skeletons, or you might have seen goats, you know, that kind of thing, like a lot of the character art.
Yeah, and that's just being the tame stuff, but let's not talk about Rule 34 here.
Whoa, I wasn't referring to that, but okay. let's allude to all that. So, Undertale is a game that is a little hard to classify by genre. The easiest comparison is RPGs, but it actually takes on a multitude of genres as you play the game.
One of the biggest ones it takes on is bullet hell during the battle sequences.
Right, because most of the combat involves dodging enemy projectiles that are idiosyncratic to what monsters you're fighting.
Actually, there's an entire boss fight later on that is nothing but bullet hell.
Right. I think I know what you're referring to, but they all kind of blend together in a few different ways. Sometimes the fights in the game also change to platforming.
Yes, they do.
And one of them, I've heard people compare it to DDR. I was thinking tower defense, or very simplistic tower defense, but I can see the comparisons to both.
There's a fight that completely takes on a shmup format.
Oh, that's right. In fact, that was what I was thinking of earlier before I realized what you were talking about. But yeah, and they even kind of have a go at parodying visual novels at a few points.
There's actually a reference to Final Fantasy VI in this game.
Oh yeah, it doesn't really take on the gameplay of VI, but it does like to kind of reference. It's very tasteful with its references, though.
I would agree with that. Actually, this is one of the games that Alex here got me into.
Yeah. Before we got into that, I was going to say that it's also compared to the Earthbound games a lot, but not as much as people like to think, but
I've played Earthbound and Mother 3 myself. I can definitely see the inspiration, but the gameplay doesn't match up with what they have. Mostly the fact that it's quirky.
Yeah, and that you're wearing a striped shirt. They really draw attention to the striped shirt thing. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about our history with Undertale. I got you into the game, you said.
I had actually seen it from a recorded live stream that the Straw Hat No did. But it wasn't until you brought it to my attention that I decided to pick it up.
I was hearing about it from a lot of different people, and at the time I was kind of grumbling about, oh, everyone shut up about Undertale already, but then I decided to kind of ask a few people I knew. I was like, hey, why do people like Undertale so much anyway? And they explained it to me. I thought it was very interesting. So I talked about, oh, I'll have to look into buying that at some point. And then this guy was like, hey, you did something nice for me one time, so how about I just gift you the game on Steam? And I was just like, oh, cool. So I got a Steam account, and I decided to, you know, give the game a go. It took me about a full weekend to do. And, yeah, then I was on board. It's like, hey, this is a pretty good game. Hey, Henry, Undertale's good.
From my experience, I took longer to play the game than Alex did, because I took breaks. At the time I was playing Undertale, I was also playing Fallout 4 and Final Fantasy 14. But he helped me through the game. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, I even got around to showing my dad the game. I decided to play with him. Like, I would kind of show him the game. He was basically the audience. I let him make a few of the choices, but it was really mostly what I was trying to do. And it did take us a few months to get through it because he needed breaks as well. But he was surprised with the game. He wasn't quite sold on the whole thing, but he thought it was still, you know, very nice, very different.
I actually own the game for both PC and PS4.
Oh, that's right. Last year, it came out for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. So, if you don't want to play it on your computer for some reason, there you go.
Yeah, it's the same game on both, so it's $10. It's not real expensive.
It was $10 on Steam last time I checked. I saw the PlayStation Vita version on the Vita store. It was like closer to $15, I think.
Really? I may have seen it differently then.
Well, there might have also been a sale to consider, but who really knows? We've both played the game, so we don't really worry about buying it as much. And like I said, I think most people are aware of the game.
This is probably going to go without saying, but people listening to this that are familiar with Undertale are either love it or hate it.
The game was created by, well, there are different people working on it, but the ringleader was a guy named Toby Fox. He did a lot of work with the game to make sure everything was good. He had his hand in a lot of the different pots. He's primarily a composer, so he's also responsible for most of the game's soundtrack, and he even puts in some songs from past works into this one. Like, there are a few of them, actually.
We'll probably be gushing about the soundtrack later on, but...
Right. There's, you know, today's favorite songs might go on a little longer than it usually does in these episodes. One of his earliest known works is a ROM hack of Earthbound called the Halloween hack.
That's what I was going to say. There was the Halloween hack. He's also done one for, I believe...
Are we talking about Homestuck?
Homestuck, thank you.
Right. He did music for that. I'm not really familiar with what Homestuck is. I just know that it's massive.
I know a little bit, but I don't follow it very much either.
Well, what's your take on it? Like, what is Homestuck, real fast?
What is Homestuck? All I know is it's an online animation, and people love it for some reason.
Okay, I thought it was a comic, or maybe it's both? I've heard people say it's really hard to describe, but...
But we're not here to talk about Homestuck.
No, but he did do work on that, and I actually heard one of his songs in Homestuck, because my brother was a fan. I heard it again here, and I was just like, oh.
I think I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the same song that was used in the Halloween hack, actually.
Yep.
So, the gameplay, we kind of dipped into that already. It's very simplistic gameplay when it's not in the different battle system. I think we should get into a token gesture of spoiler warning, even though most people know what the game's all about at this point.
Most people already know. I've played the game for many hours. I've done everything they can in the game, so spoilers are still they're still going to happen, though.
Yeah, this is your spoiler warning. If you don't want to get spoiled on the inner workings of Undertale, this is your chance to leave, but I think most people either don't care or already know. I'll just say this. Undertale is kind of one of those metafictional stories where there's, you know, a lot more under the surface than you'd first expect, and that's why a lot of people are drawn to it. I'm not going to say how. Well, we are going to say how, but that's your warning. So now that that's out of the way, we're going to talk about one of the big cruxes of the game. That's one of my favorite words today, is the option whether or not to kill monsters.
That is actually very big, as most RPGs, or actually most video games, do not have a strict pacifist run, as it's called.
That's right. In fact, you're usually rewarded for being as violent as possible.
Well, again, any video game, any RPG, anything like that, and yeah, let's take Mario. You stomp on a Goomba, done.
You get points for stomping on Goombas.
Or coins, depending on the game.
You're rewarded for violence.
But in this game, you actually are rewarded for not being violent.
Yeah. Well, you do kind of get rewarded for violence, but you figure out that it's not really a reward that you want.
Yeah, when it comes to the gameplay and the pacifist versus genocide, that's the other name of Fort Runs, there really is a huge split.
Yeah, that's actually where a lot of the RPG aspects come into play, is that it kind of deconstructs the notion of gaining experience from getting a higher body count. You get tougher the more you kill, but the game kind of changes around that too. You get weaker for not killing, so it's kind of a weird dichotomy between you killing everyone else or everyone killing you.
Normally I'd save this for later, but I will say one of the minor criticisms I have about the game is that if you do go the genocide route, there's not a lot to offer there. The game really wants you to go pacifist.
Yeah, it kind of nudges you in the direction of playing pacifist, because when you think about it, the game never actually teaches you how to fight. They teach you how to spare monsters and stuff, and the tagline of the game is the friendly RPG where no one has to die.
I mean, the story does change, and if you're going to go for everything in the game, you want to play a pacifist run first, then play a genocide run to get the best experience out of it.
Yeah, but the game kind of also takes a shot at the notion of going for everything in games. It's actually a subject matter that I've kind of gotten interested in myself. Is this, like, why do we have to do everything in a game? Like, I get it for some people. That's part of, you know, want to get the most bang for their buck. But I kind of see that it's kind of calling out people who say that they have to do this thing when they really don't have to do it.
That idea actually kind of stems from the 90s, and if you want my personal opinion, I mean, Pokemon, Gotta Catch 'Em All, Banjo-Kazooie, games like the Collectathons, that's probably where that mindset started.
Yeah, I can see how it came to be. The gameplay outside of whether or not you kill or not is kind of boring. You're just walking around.
There's not a whole lot to do in the overworld, but that's not to say that it's... You call it boring, but it is filled with quirks.
Yeah, that's the thing. They kind of rely on the writing to carry the downtime, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, there's that sequence at the end of the game, no matter which path you're on, really, where you're going through the King's Castle, and you get either... And if you've been a good boy or girl, all the monsters will tell you about the King's backstory, and if you've been killing everyone... The talking flower starts giving you his backstory, but no matter which way you look at it, they're stopping gameplay to give you info dumps, and that's not really a good gameplay design.
What makes it even weirder is during that segment, it doesn't just stop the game, it takes you to a battle a battle screen.
Yeah, that's how they interrupt your gameplay, but going into that, though, that's kind of what I like about the game's theme, is that... The battle screen, it's not just a separate screen where you hit each other. It depicts this is where you and the monster interact. It kind of blurs the line between combat and just regular interaction, which is kind of what the game wants.
I would also like to point out that some of the dialogue, and I'm still a little confused about this as well, is whether they're talking to the character you're playing as or whether some of that dialogue is talking directly to the player.
Oh yeah, that's right, because the player... is later on revealed to be a distinct entity from the character you control.
Exactly, which is kind of interesting. It's not the first time that video games have done fourth wall breaks.
No, Metal
Gear
not at all.
Metal Gear Solid 2 is a prime example of that. But I think this is one of the few games that literally doesn't just break the fourth wall, but takes shots at the player.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that in games a lot. But I think this is the first game to like do it without alienating a lot of people right out of the gate. Undertale alienates a lot of people now, but at the time, it was, like, very well received.
A lot of people still really enjoy it to this day, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. So, pacifism and killing, it's kind of... there was that guy who gave a Steam code to the Pope for some reason, because he thought Undertale was good at promoting peace between people, when that's kind of overblowing the game, really.
Giving it to the Pope just seems a little weird in the first place.
Yeah. Like look it up. The game theory guy did it.
Oh, you're... Wow.
Yeah, he did that. That's actually a thing that happened.
Ugh, man. I mean, I mentioned the other thing earlier, but getting into people in this game, it's kind of weird what people have done after this game's release.
Yeah, I guess we're going to talk about the legacy now. We're going to save that, but I kind of... You know, once you play the Pope card, you just kind of gotta commit.
I mentioned Rule 34 earlier, so I mean.
Yeah, so we're gonna kind of mention that Undertale has a lot of fans who are very happy to have played Undertale and very happy to have Undertale as a part of their lives, and are not bothered by the fact that they might come off a little strong to other people.
That's where a lot of the legacy, I think, kind of falls flat, is that people came onto this game so strong that it pushed a lot of people away because of that.
Yeah, and in fact, like, that was where I stood before I decided to just ask why people liked it and got interested in it. Because nowadays, if someone mentions Undertale in a YouTube comment, there'll be someone who calls them a mean name or tells them to die or something.
Because of the reputation surrounding the game.
Undertale is regularly lumped in with a lot of the fan bases that people don't like anymore, like the My Little Pony or Steven Universe or Five Nights at Freddy's.
I was actually going to bring that up because of that. We'll talk about that a different time. I actually like Undertale, but if you don't, I completely understand why.
Well, yeah, I mean, we both like Undertale here. It's just that we're a little wary of what Undertale has kind of... Well, the game itself hasn't changed at all, but the culture surrounding the game is a little off-putting for us.
To make a more modern, quote-unquote, recent is a better word here. The, quote, a more recent example, Rick and Morty did the same thing.
Yeah, you don't actually watch Rick and Morty, to my knowledge, but I did watch it, and I know what you're talking about. Before I watched the third season, I heard a lot of people were kind of freaking out over, oh, the Rick and Morty fans are ruining everything. I remember people were really passionate about the show. I don't remember anything crazy, and now we're looking at footage of people throwing tantrums at McDonald's. It's like, oh, okay, that's different.
I know what you're referencing.
Oh, yeah.
Undertale, I feel, kind of did that before Rick and Morty did.
Oh, yeah.
But it's kind of weird, really, because the game can be completed in, what did you say, about 5-6 hours, maybe a little bit longer?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yet it's left such an impact on people.
Yeah. I remember, actually, talking to a few friends on Skype a few years ago about this game, Spec Ops: The Line, and they kind of described the game as... you know, deconstructing its genre and kind of examining what the player does and how players rationalize horrifying acts because it's just a video game. And Undertale kind of does that, but it's not as heavy-handed as Spec Ops: The Line, and that's where I feel like Undertale is the better example between the two games.
I will actually disagree on that point, where you said it's not very heavy-handed. Genocide Run.
Well,
makes it pretty clear that what you're doing is definitely horrific, at least from the monster's viewpoint.
Yeah, but in Undertale, it's more of a choice. In Spec Ops, it's kind of you only have the one route.
Ah, okay.
At least that's what I know of it. I haven't actually played it, but I've heard people talking about it a lot.
I'm in the same boat with Alex on this one, but if you actually were to take some of the dialogue from the genocide part of Undertale and actually mix it in with, you know, real-world elements, it's pretty horrific stuff you're doing to these monsters.
Yeah, because, you know, when you think about it, when you level grind in an RPG, you're just going around killing all the monsters over and over again. Undertale examines... what if there are a finite amount of monsters? And now, what if the monsters actually had a fleshed-out culture? Now they're all dead because of you. What have you done?
And no, that is no exaggeration. If you finish the genocide run, all the monsters in the underground are dead.
Pretty much. I mean, there might be a straggler because some of them are said to have evacuated, but you never get to encounter them.
Well, there is that whole bunch of nines on the screen at the very end of the game.
Oh, that's true. They end up having you destroy the whole world after you destroy all of the monsters, which... okay, that's where the heavy-handed kind of gets a little crazy. It's just like, all right, come on.
Once you go genocide, you never go back.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of that, yeah, once you do a genocide route... route? It's like I tried to say both pronunciations at the same time. But once you go genocide, you really do... have to commit to it, because if you want to play a more pacifistic run of the game, you can, but then the game checks and remembers what you did and will alter the ending to remind you that you still did genocide, and it kind of overrides the happy ending.
Which I think is kind of, which is one of my criticisms, is that it does that. Come on, let us have our happy ending in whatever order. I don't like it when games say, oh, you did this one, you're ruined forever.
I feel like ruining it forever is a bit harsh, but I get why they went for that, because they want you to remember that your actions have consequences. You know, the past is beyond your control.
Oh, we're going back to that, huh?
Yeah, but I do think they could have gone about it in a slightly different way.
I think instead of doing it as one giant timeline, having separate timelines would have been much better.
Or maybe different save files?
Yeah, there's only one save file for Undertale.
Yeah, I was like, well, what if someone else wants to play?
I know, now you just ruined their pacifist run, you jerk.
That's actually a thing in general, is a lot of games these days, no matter what, they always have one save file. I guess that's because of the increasing prevalence of console accounts.
Console accounts, and or they want to tell a story. Our last podcast, Until Dawn, we didn't mention it, but they do the same thing there.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me in the least. Yeah, the game, it's pretty heavy-handed. It could be a lot worse, though, I think. It could also be better.
And if you do a pacifist run, it actually is really good to do that because you get a lot of backstory.
Yeah, well, you get a little bit of backstory and a little added characterization if you go the other extreme as well. But, yeah, the pacifist run is, you know, very feel-good, very, very nice story, very wholesome.
Also, the different characters, you get to interact with them more, because in a genocide run, once you get strong enough, you one-shot all the bosses with the exception of two.
Yeah, you're pretty much walking death. The game really kind of tries to make it harder for you to kill certain characters, and it's also very smart with when the player character has access to characters.
Right. When he mentioned a finite number of monsters, that's not an exaggeration again. Once you've grinded, once you've defeated enough monsters in the underground, it will eventually just go to a battle screen that says, but nobody came, which is a phrase that gets tossed around a lot in this. And that means that you cannot grind anymore in that area, and you have to go defeat the boss.
Yeah, it's basically just kind of saying, all right, you're done, kid, go on.
That's exactly what it is.
Continue your parade of death.
We mentioned characters earlier, so...
That's a big part of the game, is they really try to endear you to a lot of the characters, and for some people, it certainly worked.
There are certain characters that I really like, and others that I really don't.
Well, I actually like most of the characters, and the characters that I don't like are just kind of, eh. And then there's the one character who's very overexposed to the point where I have to remind myself that I still like the character.
Which one's that?
I'm talking about Sans.
Of course.
Yeah, they went crazy with Sans over in the fan base. He's, like, portraying him as, like, way powerful and, like, alternate versions of him and stuff.
Well, main reason for that is the genocide fight with him.
Yeah. See, the thing about Sans is he's literally lazy bones, and he spends most of the game just kind of slacking off and joking around and stuff.
He's also a fan of puns.
Yeah. If you kill his brother, who is one of the early bosses, he'll disappear. So if you spare his brother, he'll stick around and make jokes and eventually give you a moment of backstory with him that kind of hints that he's a little stronger than he lets on.
Yeah, if you kill his brother Papyrus, he disappears from the game. However, if you go a complete genocide route, Sans is the final boss and he is the toughest fight in the game.
Yeah, he waits until the last minute to challenge you, and he's very lazy about it because he only fights you if you've killed literally everyone in your path, and he's only fighting you because he's the last resort. He doesn't even want revenge. He knows that you're going to destroy the world afterward, and he cheats by kind of sidestepping the usual rules of the game's combat.
Which a lot of people wonder if he kind of breaks the fourth wall himself. And I would say he does a little bit, but as he said, he sidesteps your attacks because it's a traditional battle system in that regard, is that characters will just stand there and take the attack, except for Sans. He literally dodges.
Yeah, he's the only one in the game to dodge, and it just kind of lets you know that his fight's going to play by different rules than most of the fights because, you know, he can't be bothered.
He also will ignore your invincibility frames.
That's right.
And a lot of his attacks turn to platforming segments as well.
Yeah, that's a common thing between him and his brother.
Oh, and he attacks you in the menus.
Yeah. I can see why a lot of people think he's the coolest character. I get the appeal, but he's just kind of overexposed to the fan base that I kind of wince a little when I see him, but then I have to remember, like, no, I still like him. He still legitimately has merit.
He does legitimately have merit, and if you play a pacifist run, he's just kind of a chill guy.
Yeah, he'll just hang out with you.
And take you to Grilby's.
And then pour ketchup all over your food.
Yeah. Other characters in the game, some people are really endeared to Toriel and Asgore, the goat parents of the group, of the Undertale universe?
You almost said of the group, like this is friends or something, and they're all going to play in the fountain.
Well, if you do a Drew Pazvis route.
Yeah, but now I want to see that. But yeah, Toriel and Asgore, they have their fans. I'm a big fan of Sans's brother, Papyrus.
Papyrus is cool, though he's a little boneheaded, pardon the pun, at times.
He's very earnest, and, you know, it's kind of refreshing to see just how benign he is.
I would like to point out, though, that am I the one who's getting sick of every time somebody voices Papyrus, it's always a Skeletor voice?
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I like to do a Skeletor voice even before Papyrus came along, but everyone gives him a Skeletor voice for some reason. When I first played the game, I didn't imagine that for him. I mentioned that to a few people, and they were like, wow, you're the first.
I actually saw one where instead of voicing him with a Skeletor accent, they actually gave him a British accent, like a posh British man. It was actually kind of neat.
Well, that's different now.
Let's see. Toriel, she didn't really grow on me. She is the overbearing mother, but she's also the first boss.
Yeah, she's kind of the gatekeeper to whether or not you want to commit to killing everyone or whether or not you even know how to avoid killing.
And her name, Toriel, is a play on the word tutorial, and that's exactly what the first area of the game is. Interesting to know, and this anecdote I've heard a lot, is the first time people played this game, one of the lines she says is, "Prove to me you're strong enough to survive," and then they accidentally kill her.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I went into the game doing pacifist, based on a tip that I'm not supposed to fight things. Yeah. So I just kind of took that to the extreme. I didn't actually know that I should have done that. Like, if they didn't tell me, like, I might have considered actually fighting her.
And you told me about that anyway, so I went into it with a pacifist mindset.
Yeah, I kind of blew that for you. I should have let you kind of figure it out for yourself.
Oh, no, it's fine. Let's see.
Undyne.
Undyne. Probably one of the I'm not sure if she's one of the least favorite characters, but she's one of my personal favorites.
Out of the main characters, I feel like she's kind of the one that has the least connection to the bigger scope of things.
Yeah, but that's entirely fine, because she definitely gets a nice connection in the genocide run.
Oh yeah, she becomes one of the hardest bosses in the game.
Second hardest, in fact.
Yeah, well, you know, there's not a lot of competition.
Okay, that's fair.
She's just kind of extreme, and that's about it.
She's extreme, but she is tough.
And she's also earnest.
Yeah, I feel that Papyrus actually gets a lot of his character traits from Undyne.
He does kind of look up to her.
True, and he does mention that even.
Okay, I think the next key character is Alphys.
We might as well lump them together, Alphys and Metaton.
Yeah, I was going to go after him next. Alphys is a scientist, and she's a big nerd. She's kind of like your Otacon in the game.
And almost literally, she is shown to be an otaku.
Otacon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like one of my Japanese animes.
Oh, dear.
And Metaton is her robot, who is a big television diva. He always likes to broadcast himself and everything he does. He likes to make a big show of himself.
Yeah, showboating. I mean, that's definitely evidence in the final battle you have with him.
Yeah, Metaton, like, other than Papyrus, Metaton's probably my favorite character.
Unlike Papyrus, however, he's not much of a bonehead.
No, he's more of a metalhead. There's a bit more to Alphys and Metaton than you would first expect. Metaton, you kind of learn more of his backstory if you go digging around enough. Alphys, you learn more about her backstory if you pursue the good ending of the game.
True Pacifist Run is the only way to see her backstory. Otherwise, if you play Genocide Run, you never encounter her.
Yeah.
She also has the distinction of being the only main character you never actually fight in the game at all.
Yeah. There is a sequence in the final boss where you're up against her, but all of her attacks are Metaton attacks.
So it doesn't really count.
Yeah. We should point out for reference that there is a middle ground between the pacifist and genocide routes of the game, where if you just kill a few of the monsters, it's considered a neutral path.
The neutral runs.
And there are different, like, variations of it, that it's a whole spectrum.
It is actually really interesting to go through and only kill certain bosses to see the different endings. Because, again, we're already doing spoilers. Any of the neutral runs, you have to kill at least one person, and it's Asgore. However, if you kill others along the way, you get different endings of who takes over the underground, including one of them being the Toby dog.
Oh, yeah. The Toby fox inserted himself into the game as just a regular dog. Nothing special about it. It's just there.
It actually does have a name in the game, though. It's called Annoying Dog.
Oh, yeah. I guess the next character is Asgore. He's built up for most of the game as either a terrifying threat or a big pushover. Then you find out he really is a pushover, but he's also capable of killing you and has killed other children in the past.
He has 6 human souls and they need 7 for him to break the barrier that divides monsterkind from humanity.
They go over his backstory on your way to meet him, and he really was given a bad hand in life, but he didn't react to it in the best way, and now he's kind of stuck in a bad situation.
What I like about Asgore, and something I can completely relate to, is he's very repentant for what he did.
Yeah, they really try to flesh him out as that, yes, he's the big monster king, but he doesn't appreciate having to fight you.
Yeah, in fact, it almost looks like he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
But he feels he has to.
I think the other character we talk about is the Flower.
Flowey.
He's kind of introduced early on as kind of a mascot-type character, and then very quickly, turns out he's psychotic.
There's a lot of interesting things with Flowey. I mean, he's an anime flower, for one. But the other thing is, it's also pointed out in the game that because of your determination, which gets thrown around a lot, you have the power to save and reset. Only one other character in the game has the ability to do that, and it's Flowey.
Yeah, he kind of had player character privilege before you showed up, and then you took that from him. So he kind of wants to see what you'll do. He makes friends with you if you start killing more and more, but he kind of sees you as a pawn if you don't.
He's also the final boss of all of your neutral runs. This is the fight I was mentioning earlier that's nothing but bullet hell. It's him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because you're literally in a segment where you're moving your soul around and you can't stop to do fight. You just have to hit it as you're moving.
Yeah, you just have the cursor and you just have to avoid all his attacks. I remember. He doesn't even give you a break.
He doesn't let up. I'd like to point out his name is his official boss name is probably one of the best names I've ever heard in any medium ever. The official name is Photoshop Flowey, because his model for the boss was actually done in Photoshop.
I hope Photoshop appreciates their name getting used in Undertale.
I'm sure they do.
Do we want to talk about his alter ego, or do we want to let people find that out for themselves?
Let's just say he has a huge part of the pacifist ending.
All right, that's fair enough. Because we've been talking a little longer than even the Until Dawn episode, honestly. I think it's time we talk about our favorite songs.
And, oh boy.
Yeah, Toby Fox, when I said he was primarily a composer, I wasn't kidding. He does all the game's music, and he makes very good use of leitmotifs. I was never really good at pronouncing that one, but songs to be associated with certain characters, and he's creative with playing them at different speeds to incorporate different moods.
I remember reading somewhere, actually, that when he actually made the game, he made the music first with no real character in mind, and then made the character based on the music.
Well, that's interesting. I'd have to look into that.
It's kind of a backwards method, because a lot of people make music for characters already established.
Mm. Like I said, he's done music for his Halloween hack and for Homestuck, and a few of those do make appearances in the Undertale soundtrack.
There's one specific one, and it's kind of the elephant in the room, and it's also one of my personal favorites.
Right. We're going to do today's favorite songs, but rather than me just listing 3 songs I like, I'm going to let Henry list 3 songs he likes, and then we'll go over mine, and we'll just kind of talk back and forth about it.
Okay. It was actually very hard deciding which 3 I really like, because I like all of them, really.
Yeah, I like a lot more than 3 songs for any given game I discuss, but I just pick 3 that I think are different enough from each other, and they're not all from the same general part of the game or anything.
Right. In my case, the ones I picked is the elephant in the room, Megalovania.
Yeah, Megalovania, that's Toby's signature song, I believe.
It has appeared in every single one of his games in one form or another. I believe it was originally called Megalo Strikes Back, but I could be wrong about that.
No, I think that was a different song he did.
Oh, okay. But yeah, Megalovania appears in every one of his hacks in some form or another. And I've heard all 3 different versions of it. My Undertale is by far my favorite.
Alright, and this plays when you're fighting Sans at the end of Genocide, right?
Yes, this is the Sans battle theme.
I ask right as if I don't already know. Like, I've never played Genocide, but I've done enough YouTube to figure it out.
And you've seen me play Genocide as well, so...
Yeah, I saw you and him going at it.
Oh yeah, how many times did I die?
I never counted.
I lost count after the 10th one.
Yeah, Megalovania. I like that song as well. It's very climactic.
It's definitely a final battle sort of theme. Like, you know, if Sans doesn't stop you here, you will go on to destroy everything.
I don't feel like it's a final battle unless it's used in a lighter game, but I do feel like it's good for, like, quirky battle, kind of.
I suppose you're right there. I would also like to point out, and you pointed this out to me, actually, is that Megalovania is not supposed to be Sans' theme. It's supposed to be your theme.
I've heard people are actually contesting that now more often.
I actually will still disagree and say it's your theme, because what other person goes on a genocide spree?
But a megalomaniac.
Exactly.
I heard the song's title is a reference to Megalomania, which is the boss theme from Live Alive.
Wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. They do sound very similar. In fact, they're literally one letter apart.
Yeah, the songs don't sound too similar, but hey, I like both songs anyway.
Or it could just be a reference to Megalomania in general.
Yeah. So, what's another song you like?
Going and switching tack to the pacifist run, I really like Hopes and Dreams.
Alright, so that's the first half of the final boss theme.
Right. That one, I think, is also very climactic, but it's also, unlike Megalovania, which is very, kind of got the dark riff undertone, Hopes and Dreams is a very uplifting orchestral.
Yeah, it's a triumphant version of the game's main musical theme.
Right. It plays during, as you said, the first half of the final battle. And by the time you at this point, the fight option, I don't know why it's still there, because you can't do anything with it.
Probably because they just didn't want to restructure the menu for that.
They do that in the Asgore fight.
Well, that's the point, though.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, Hopes and Dreams is... Again, it's one of those that's very uplifting, orchestral, and it kind of makes you feel like, yeah, I can do this, even if the odds are stacked against you.
And your third song?
This one can play in either neutral or pacifist. It's Spear of Justice, which is Undyne's theme.
Oh yeah, that's her battle theme.
It is, because there is one, I believe, just called Undyne?
Yeah.
That is her main theme. Spear of Justice is the battle remix of it.
Okay. I know what you're talking about. There is music associated with Undyne that's just called Undyne, but no, her field theme that sounds similar to Spear of Justice, it's actually her screaming automatopoeia. It's called Ngya or something.
Oh, I see. Thank you for the correction.
They get a little overly specific with some of their soundtrack names. Like, there's a song that's called Bird That Carries You Over a Ledge that plays for the scene of the same name.
Bird That Carries You Over a Disproportionately Small Gap, I believe is what it is.
Yeah, so I get where the mistake comes from. But yeah, that's a good song. It's Spear of Justice.
It's actually another kind of... It's not as uplifting as Hopes and Dreams, but it's definitely more of a battle march kind of theme.
Yeah, it's really hot-blooded, like Undyne herself.
Hot-blooded, fierce.
Very piratey.
Relentless, that's the word I'm looking for. Fun fact, Spirit Justice gets remixed again for Dating Fight.
Oh yeah, it's actually got a lot of music that's used throughout the game. It's like kind of a remix of the Waterfall theme and the Ruins theme.
Which makes sense for the Waterfall theme, because that's where she is most of the time.
Yeah. Well, alright. I decided to pick my favorite songs as well, and I made sure that they weren't the same songs. My first favorite song is Death by Glamour, which is the background music for the proper fight with Metaton after he's done messing around.
I would like to point out that there apparently are two different versions of Death by Glamour. There's a lower pitch version of it in the game, and then a higher pitch version that's actually on the soundtrack.
Yeah, they do that with some of the songs.
I don't know why. But the game version I don't like as much as the soundtrack version, except for one part.
Is it the part where he talks?
No. I'm talking the actual music.
Oh.
But there's a specific part later on, I'll have you listen to it later, where it almost sounds like a jazz solo.
Okay. Well, I like that Death by Glamour kind of incorporates Metaton's different musical themes, as well as the core theme, which is where the fight takes place. It kind of gives me a bit of a flashback to Banjo-Tooie, how the boss themes were remixed off the levels.
It is very... It's definitely one of those that's a showman sort of theme. It's... It almost feels like it'd be in a cheesy sitcom or something.
Something like that, or a game show.
Yeah, so it actually fits Metatone perfectly.
Yeah. Another favorite song of mine is a song that has the same name as the game itself, Undertale. In the neutral and pacifist versions of the game, when you're going through the King's Castle and they're telling you his tragic backstory, this song plays for the whole time. It's very emotional, and if not for the song, it'd be a bad scene because it's just arresting gameplay to give you exposition, but the music is like very emotional and potent, so it kind of makes it easy to overlook.
It's really good for a lot of your emotional scenes. When I was running Pathfinder a few weeks back, I actually used this theme for some of the more emotional scenes in my campaign, so...
Yeah, it's a very emotionally powerful song. It's actually, I don't like listening to it too often because then I feel like it kind of detracts from it a bit, you know?
You like saving it for very specific moments.
Yeah, so it's like it's one of the... Even though it's one of my favorite songs in the soundtrack, I don't listen to it as often as some of the others.
Well, I'm with you on that one. Although it's also funny that one of the players in that campaign compared it to a Hallmark commercial, but that's for another day.
And then we can't take the scene seriously next time we play Undertale. And the last favorite song is Another Medium. It plays during the fire area of the game. I believe it's also one of Toby's reused songs.
Another Medium for me is actually my favorite overworld theme.
Mine too, actually.
It's got kind of a... How do I put this? It's kind of a hot theme without feeling like it's a volcano. It almost reminds me of being on the... Well, actually, I shouldn't say on the beach.
It's a little more techno than I expected it to be.
Actually, you pointed out during my Genocide run that there was another form of another medium that played. It sounded like Jukebox was actually melting.
Hell yeah, because when you do Genocide, the music slows down to kind of match the population of monsters.
It's not just slow down, it's also pitch down.
Oh yeah, that too. But yeah, Another Medium is just really catchy. It's kind of like dance club almost.
And considering Metatons in this area, that's not surprising.
Well, we have talked about Undertale for quite some time now.
And we could go on for hours if we wanted to, but for sake of our audience, we probably shouldn't.
Yes, we'll be merciful. We'll spare you from listening to further Undertale talk.
If you suddenly hear that someone was murdered due to bad puns, you'll know what happened.
So, Henry, is there anything you'd like to plug besides plugging my vocal cords?
If you actually are interested in Undertale, pick it up on Steam or PS4. It's 10 to 15 bucks. It's really cheap. And pretty much any old toaster oven can run it.
Yeah, well, I've been Master Alex. That has been Henry. Actually, I've not been Master Alex. I've just been the master of the podcast.
I've been Henry the guest.
Yes, Henry the guest, Alex the master. I've actually been the Axeman, but I prefer Alex. And we will see you on the next one. Please subscribe to the Bitcast if you're interested in hearing more.
Listen to Bitcast anytime on podcast1.com and on the Podcast One app.